The easy situation is when you get something like tamoxifen, where you're absolutely overwhelmed with the amount of data. There's vast numbers of women who've been randomised between tamoxifen and no tamoxifen, and at first, the situation was that there was a definite difference in recurrence, but no definite difference in breast cancer mortality. Then there was a definite difference in recurrence and a definite difference in breast cancer mortality, but no significant difference in overall mortality. And finally, as the data matured, it turns out that you've got a big effect on recurrence, which eventually turns into a big effect on breast cancer mortality, with very little effect on other causes of death. There's only a very, very small effect of tamoxifen, an adverse effect on death from uterine cancer and from pulmonary embolus and thromboembolic disease, and there may even be a counterbalancing reduction in death from heart disease, because, of course, tamoxifen does have favourable effects on blood lipids. So the effects on non-breast cancer mortality, we now know, looking back on the story, are very, very small. And the effects on breast cancer mortality are really quite substantial, but they do take some years to emerge. In fact, in a lot of the trials in breast cancer, the main differences in mortality come something like a decade after the treatment is initially given. You get little difference in the first few years, and then the main difference 5, 10, 15 years afterwards. It could well be that that's going to be the same story with ATTACC. You've got this very promising difference in early recurrence, and it might well be that, as with tamoxifen, that will, after some years, translate into a difference in breast cancer mortality and into a difference in overall mortality.
What about the issue of non-cancer deaths in general as you look at a trial? I remember when I was honored that you allowed me to observe the prostate meeting in Oxford, and you did this review of the concept of how non-cancer deaths affect trial results. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course, it's easier in breast cancer because breast cancer involves women who have lower death rates from other diseases, and it involves younger patients. Of all the common cancers, it's the one that occurs at the earliest age, and it affects women. And so in breast cancer trials, you've got predominantly breast cancer deaths, and so the problem of other deaths isn't as big. Prostate cancer, in contrast, affects men rather than women, and it comes at an older age than any other type of cancer. And so when you see prostate cancer patients, very often their main risk isn't actually death from their prostate cancer, it's going to be death from whatever else gets you in old age. And in the trials, you'll have often more deaths from causes other than prostate cancer than you'd have from prostate cancer. And so you've got to look at the prostate cancer deaths and the other deaths separately. And in the prostate cancer trials, with, say, of hormonal treatment, immediate versus deferred hormonal treatment, if you exclude the hormonal treatments that kill people, things like DES, we know that this is actually cardiotoxic, that that was increasing non-prostate cancer mortality. But the other things, like castration or LHRH inhibitors, they do control the prostate cancer, and they don't have any material effect on death from other causes. And so eventually, when you get enough data, you finish up with the same story as with tamoxifen. Big obvious effects on recurrence, really quite definite effects on prostate mortality, no net effect on non-prostate mortality, and now, at last, a significant effect on overall mortality. So that's the story that now exists on prostate cancer, but for a long time, it wasn't clear.
Well, you know, the other thing is the age of the patients who get into the trial is one thing, but then the age of the patient in front of you is a different issue. So, for example, you might have proof of principle of the effect on prostate cancer mortality, but you can't really see it because it gets diluted out. And that's looking, let's say, at a trial population, age 65, whatever, 70. Now, I've got a 50-year-old man in my office. I'm looking at the same intervention. Would I be able to say, well, hey, maybe this is going to be different because he has less competing mortality?
Yeah, I think the conclusion, really, from the hormonal trials is that the effects on breast cancer mortality or on prostate cancer mortality are really definite, and there is little net effect on other causes of death. So you can largely forget the other causes of death. I'm not dismissing the few individuals who do suffer pulmonary embolus because of tamoxifen, but it's a very rare event compared with the extent to which tamoxifen can reduce breast cancer mortality. And also, possibly, there are counterbalancing other side effects of tamoxifen that would be favourable. So as far as other deaths are concerned, when we're talking about modern hormonal treatments of prostate cancer, not DES, which is cardiotoxic, or the modern hormonal treatments of breast cancer, really, the only real effect is the effect on the cancer mortality. The other things have I think, caused confusion, but I think that confusion has disappeared. The thing is, you want to reduce overall mortality. And if you want to reduce overall mortality, then the obvious, but not necessarily the best analysis to do, is just a crude analysis of overall mortality in the trials. That's fine when you've got the statistical power to do it, but it's not fine when you've got a definite effect on the mortality of the disease you're trying to control and no significant adverse effect. Still, the muddle caused by the random noise in those other deaths that are not affected one way or another by treatment can obscure the fact that you are doing good and are not doing any material harm.